Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats.
You know, boys and girls, there is such genuine pleasure in just the power of a good old-fashioned laugh. And you know what? If you're within the sound of my voice, that must mean you're in the seats with once more. As always, my name is Dave Voigt, and I'm the host of this podcast, where we sit down with a wide-ranging variety of entertainment industry professionals, and we pick their brain about current projects, state of the industry, how they got started, and so very much more, in a light and in a conversational fashion. You know, if you like how we do things around here, I am going to go out on that limb and assume that you do, because let's face it, you're listening right now. And if you are listening, then subscribe. Hit that subscribe button, give us the old 5-star rating on your podcast provider of choice. We're available pretty much everywhere, places like Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. And plus, we archive every single one of our episodes over at our In the Seats YouTube channel. So if you want to give us a like and subscribe there as well, God knows we would absolutely appreciate it. Also, don't hesitate to check us out on social media. We're on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Letterboxd, the TikTok, the Threads, probably a few other places. Oh, it's X now, it's not Twitter, but you know what I'm talking about. We're at In the Seats for all sorts of fun updates. And finally, and I do dare say most importantly, please pay us a visit over at In the Seats, intheseats.ca, for all the latest and greatest from the world of film, television, basically the moving image at large. Because guess what? If we love to watch it and write about it and talk about it, we'd love it even more when you come by and read about it and listen about it. So please do us that kindness and pay us a visit. On this episode, boys and girls, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, we got a fun one. This is a treat that kind of hit us out of left field, but we cannot wait to tell you about it. It is a brand new TV show, which is available over at Prime Video now, and it's called Davy and Jones's Locker. It is a high school story of two young women, Davy and Jonesy, who feel out of step with their peers in the banal backdrops of their high school, but when they discover that their locker is a portal, to a multiverse, they set off on some wild and crazy adventures. From writer, actor, director, creator Evan E. Rosen, this show is think like Booksmart meets Mystery Science Theater meets a lot of very deadpan, borderline, well, I don't want to say borderline, full-on silly comedy, sci-fi adventure. It's a show that embraces the absurd, and I mean, especially that its two primary characters are, you know, two women in high school, and I mean, you know, there is that temptation to do the coming-of-age story, and thankfully they kind of resist it here, and they just make it about having laughs and really getting out there with some gonzo stuff as they explore the multiverses of their high school. And I was howling watching the entire thing. I cannot wait for more and more people to see it. I certainly hope it gets a season 2 because, I mean, it certainly deserves it. This is hilarity to the next level. But like I said, check out Davy and Jones's Locker, which is available on Prime Video now, but also on Hulu in the States if you're listening there. But first, enjoy our talk with creator Evan E. Rosen because, goddamn, it's a really good one. I had fun with this one. She was great. And the show's great. Go watch the show. Go watch it. Go watch stuff. That's what we do here. But again, Davy and Jones's Locker. Go check it out. You will be smiling from ear to ear. Bye. All right, well, obviously, I mean, just to kick it off, I mean, the show's hilarious. Absolutely loved it. I mean, congrats so much. Really.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
I guess my first question is, like, walk me through sort of the origin of this story, and particularly these characters, because, I mean, it's not just high school humor. It is dry, deadpan high school humor, which I absolutely adore.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, I really do try to write, I think, from character first, even though this show is so premise-y. But I think knowing that, I think the pitch for the show started with these two characters. And I was really thinking about what my relationships were like in high school and the kind of friendships I've built in my life and what I wanted to see portrayed on TV. And then it was about this hooky premise. So it was kind of about combining, like making sure the hooky premise could live, you know, on the foundations of this friendship and this relationship. And then for the humor, I really wanted to make a show that was centered around female characters in high school that was just funny first, because I've not seen a ton of that. To be honest, and I was missing that as a young comedian when I was in high school, where there wasn't this huge onus on the female characters to find themselves and learn to fit in and go through a lot of kind of emotional hardships, while the male characters just kind of got to get all the jokes. And so I really wanted to create something where, as an aspirational kind of thing, these are two female characters who have already fully found themselves in their teens. They don't need to fit in anywhere. Everyone else is the problem, and they're just riding high on the comedy.
I mean, it's one of those things, like you said, it is refreshing because, again, like you said, they get the jokes, they get to own the funny moments. But I mean, I'm kind of curious, how did you come about managing to marry it to this gimmick laden, premise-y heavy, sci-fi dimension hopping trope, which again I absolutely love, but it's my kind of batshit crazy, which I totally on board for, but it's not an obvious marriage.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Well, it started. AJ Trout from the production company came to me from Blue Ant Media, and all he had was a title. He had like dusted off this title, and he was like, "Davy and Jonesy's Locker. I don't know, something supernatural going on with some kids in a locker." So I kind of took that away, and I had already been noodling on something, to your point, that was about this kind of friendship. So that was where I started. And then I don't know how I landed in the multiverse quite. I'm sure because it's kind of in the ethos, and it occur and I was honestly, I was maybe had been watching Sliders. But there was some way that I really love sci-fi, and that's like a genre that I love and know a lot about, which I hope comes through in the series, although I'm sure I'm gonna just get reamed on
Oh,
Reddit.
no, it doesn't. No, you're doing it right. You know your shit. Trust me.
There's a lot of holes, a lot of sci-fi holes. I'm sure I'll be hearing about it. So that was really exciting to marry to me. Just that kind of the sci-fi that I love, and that kind of campy era of sci-fi, TNG, Voyager, all those feelings, and really like old sci-fi short stories, where you just get that fine, kind of fun, almost moral little tale, but with an interesting twist. And I was like, oh, that'd be so fun kind of pair here and get that episodic feeling, but in a high school show and with these characters who we care about.
Now, I mean, obviously, talk to me about finding your Davy and your Jonesy because, I mean, good comedy relies on chemistry. And I mean, these two just pair off each other so well.
The search was, oh dear, did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
Okay, let's pretend that didn't happen.
Okay.
And I'm going to stop my phone from doing that again. And I'm going to tell you the answer.
Perfect.
The search for Davy and Jonesy was exhaustive, and it had to be. I think I saw it was thousands of tapes. Like I didn't see thousands, but I think that I watched hundreds. And my casting director said it was more tapes than she had ever watched, and more than she had ever sent to a client. Like it was so. And at one point, we were looking at, actual teens, and then that kind of pivoted, and then we were like, okay, no, for the comedy chops we need, people that are slightly older but can read as teens. So, and I looked at so many tapes from so many brilliant people, and then of course it was about the chemistry. So we had huge Davy lists and huge Jonesy lists, and then we needed them to come together. And Veronica Sulakowska, who plays Davy, both the director and I knew sort of from the comedy scene in Toronto, and as a fellow comedian, and Allison brought her name up to me, and I was like, oh yeah, she's so funny. She would be so great. And we had her audition, and it was she was just so perfect in the role. But then it was about finding this balance, and Jalen, her tape, both Allison and I really like sat up when we first watched it, and we really felt like she had something special. And then when they did their chemistry read, they like both were from Barrie. They like it was like they'd known each other for years, and they had just met on Zoom, even. It wasn't even live. And it was like it was off the charts, and we just knew, and we were done. But we were done after what felt like I feel like I know every teenage girl in North America now, and I know that's not true, but that's how it feels.
Love it. Now, I mean, obviously Dan is fantastic as Mr. Schneider, and I mean just this sort of borderline Mystery Science Theater 3000 protagonist, but he walks it right up to the line, but never quite goes over. Like, talk to me about, I guess, the tone of what you wanted sort of the bad guy to be.
Well, thank you for getting that reference, and even giving that reference, because Mystery Science Theater 3000 was a big influence on the show. I love it. Yeah, Dan, I've known Dan for a long time. Dan is an improviser and a comedian as well. So we've known each other for years as comedians. But he's such a talented actor as well. He's extremely multifaceted. I'm always just so blown away by Dan's talent. And when he read for the role, there was a way that the role had evolved a few times because I wasn't sure how fussy I wanted him to be, but that needed to be with there needed to be a sustainability to and watchability to him. And I had started to write more of a hard edge into his role. I think at one point I gave kind of Billy Eichner as a reference, as sort of like, but it was combined with someone else. There was some strange combination where it was Billy Eichner meets someone else that you wouldn't expect to go together. So I kind of created this impossible brief. But it was someone I wanted to start to see some anger and some rage in the character, but again, in a way that was sustainable and watchable. This was a really fine line to walk. And then Dan's tape, he did a scene from episode two and it made the like bizarre choice to eat a sandwich during the scene. And it was so funny. And he was so glib and cavalier and like shitty with these girls. He was the only one who wasn't playing it kind of hysterical. He was just like baffled and annoyed in this way that was just wonderful. And if you watch episode two and the scene where he's explaining the multiverse to the girls, he doesn't engage with it too much, but you will see there's a sandwich that's on the counter, and the sandwich makes a comeback in episode nine, and all of that started because Dan made a bizarre choice in his audition.
I, you know what? Because I got up to episode two and I was wondering why the sandwich was there, but now I know. I'm glad. But I
Well,
mean,
yeah, a little Easter egg.
now, I mean, I gotta ask because I mean, obviously, you've acted a bunch, you've written, you've done a myriad of different things. But I mean, showrunner is probably a different beast. Like, when did that kind of holy shit moment settle in with you, especially in sort of the development process of all this? Because I mean, you also take a role in the show as well. I can imagine sort of you're juggling 18 things at once.
Yes, making the choice to play Principal Debbie Neighbors was borderline psychotic of me, because I knew what I was in for. Because I had done my previous show, New Eden, on Crave, which I had made with Kayla Lorette, was my sort of first kick at the can at show running in a serious way, and that we were co-starring in, but we were also co-show running, and it was similar to this. It was extremely different from this, but it was similar to this in that it was hyper creator driven and hyper precise, and we made every single little choice that you see on camera. So I had at least gone through the gauntlet of being and going and post in particular is something that like until you've gone through post, you can't know. Like every first time showrunner is going to have to be like, "What's this part of the sound mix? I've not heard of this before." Even if you have some experience, there's always going to be the gauntlet of post. So I had been through that. So there was a way that I had learned a lot from the experience of New Eden, but stepping off the cliff without a co-creator and a co-creator who on New Eden happened to be my best friend and my closest collaborator, and just go doing it, completely living and dying by my own voice alone was I was prepared. And then, to your point, there were many holy shit moments, and mostly it was, and I thought, oh, I could do a small role because I starred in my last show that I show ran, but there were definitely days where I was like running full scale production meetings and a poor AD having to come and being like, we gotta get you in that wig, and me being like, I fucked up, I did, yeah, I'm so sorry. But it was fun. I'm really glad I got to play Debbie, and it all I had an amazing team and an amazing crew and amazing keys and a lot and some people I'd worked with before, so they kind of knew my style and they know to just come find me on set, and I run things pretty fast and loose, and it all worked out.
Well, and I mean the energy and sort of the, I guess, the camaraderie and sort of the looseness of the material comes through. And I mean there's joy in that, but obviously audiences will look at something like this and be like, oh, comedy's easy. It's like, no, comedy's fucking hard.
It's fucking
from
hard.
the from the comedians that are like, what is it about comedy that is so much harder than maybe doing something straight?
I think it's because part of it is that you have to make it look effortless.
Yeah.
Like that's part. It's not funny if it looks No, I mean, it can look deliberate and be funny, but there is a way that even in the most constructed comedy, you need a feeling of naturalness. And there's nothing natural about being on a film set. You have to do the same things over and over and over and over again. Sometimes someone you're doing something in a close up and someone's like right here holding like a bounce or a boom mic or whatever, and it's like, you know, there's all these people and the crew's not laughing anymore. Like you're playing for the crew, but at some point it's like, yeah, these grips just want to go home and they've seen you do this 9 times and we're on hour 11 of a day that's going into overtime. Like they're not gonna be like, ha ha ha, that was great. Like that's not what we're doing here. We all just have to do our own jobs. So there's a way that I think comedy's hard because humor is very subjective, and I think drama is also, but less subjective in a way. When something sad happens, it's easier to all agree that it's sad. Not to reduce drama to just sometimes something sad happens. It's much more complex than that, but you know what I'm getting at. And then, so I think it's those combinations of factors that it just has to look so effortless, and it takes just as much effort. So there's an added bit of effort to create that effervescent effortlessness, and
Well, and I mean,
that's
and you're right. I mean, comedy is so subjective to taste. Like, so many different things can be funny. If we see somebody die in a car crash, you know, there's no way that's not objectively sad.
yeah. Yes, exactly. And humor is very, and there will be people that do not get this show. And that's also something that's hard as a comedy writer that you have to go into, especially with something that's this campy and this specific. I'm really prepared for there to be a whole pocket of people who are like, I don't get it and I don't like it. And I don't think it's funny. And I disagree. I think it's very funny. You know, that's also part of the gauntlet of being a comedy writer, because there's no way, there's no, you can think of the funny. There are people who don't think Jerry Seinfeld's funny. There are people who don't get that show. It's about nothing and they don't care for it. There's always going to be someone who
For
doesn't
sure, for
get the
sure.
comedy. So that you're doing. So that's also part of, I think, why it's harder, because it's more vulnerable.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I mean, just to start putting a bow on this, I gotta ask because, and again, it's a bit of a silly question, but it's one I love to ask because there is such a heady brew of influences in this show. I gotta ask. Like, was there a moment where a young Ebony had sort of the light bulb go off when she saw something and be like, okay, I want to do that? Like, was there a show or a movie or a moment where sort of the light bulb just went ding?
Definitely, definitely. I'll give you the answer for this show, because I
Sure.
feel like it's different for different things, but definitely, and I think this one speaks most to Young Anthony more than some of my other projects that are more adult, maybe, where this one is like I was thinking of myself as a teen, and the two answers are weird. Well, they're not weird. One is Strangers with Candy, which I just loved and I found in high school, and I was like, what is this? You shouldn't be allowed to do this. It's so weird and funny and charming and bizarre. And I feel like if there was a show I had to cite that was like, because most of my influences on the show are kind of sci-fi, and it's like, oh, I love Star Trek, I love these things. But as a comedic influence, that was something that I think I went back to that show a lot in my mind while I was making this, to be like, get the lobster costume in there. There will be people who love that. And there will be a lot of people who go, why? What is this scene? And that was, and Strangers with Candy to me is one of the funniest shows ever made. And it's so bravely strange, but still accessible and charming. So that was a big one for me. And another one, weirdly, is the original, not like Warner Brothers cartoons from the 90s, particularly like Animaniacs, Freakazoids, things like that. And at some point when we were filming, I didn't even realize I had done this, but at some point when we were filming something kind of complicated, Allison, the director, and I were talking, and she was like, so basically what you want is just a live cartoon. And I went, yeah, that's where the sweet spot of the joke is. Like, I want that moment. And I would talk a lot about the Roadrunner moment. Well, it's not Roadrunner, it's Coyote, but when he that moment right before when you'd realize you're over the cliff before gravity takes over, like that was like kind of a comedic moment I would ask for a lot. And we kind of realized I was talking a lot about, and I come from an animation writing background, but Animaniacs for me as a kid, sorry, this is a long answer.
No, please.
I loved it so much And I've gone back and watched it and been like, this is an entire episode about like the Red Scare or blackballing in the 30s. Like, why did they put this in a children's show? It's absurd. But I loved how inside baseball it felt and how high reference, but like low brow it was so much of the time. And it was so zany, but it was so smart. And Freakazoid was incredible in that way. And I really remember as a kid getting the meta joke from the opening of Freakazoid, where it's the writers being like, oh, if you don't watch, we'll be unemployed. And as a kid, being like, whoa, you can make a joke like that. And I think that weirdly, if you start thinking about those shows and you know those shows, and then you watch my show, you're like, it's a lot of Animaniacs, which is crazy. But I feel like those were my first moments of understanding comedy at a second level that wasn't like somebody falls down and that's funny. Like it had another tier going on.
You know what? I love that you brought up Animaniacs because I did get to rewatch a lot of those recently, and it hits on such a different level when you're an adult. It's like, oh my God.
It's so smart and so stupid, which is my favorite thing in the world. To be really cleverly stupid is the funniest thing to me that you can be. Just complexly, really elaborately stupid is just heaven.
No, and I'm with you on that 100%. And I mean, just to wrap this up, I got to go back to what you said originally, just about wanting this to be a female-driven show, but just funny. And I mean, how people often lose track because, like you said, so many of these, films with young women in high school and what it's coming of age, it's finding themselves, it's blah 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 blah. But there is such joy and such importance in just being funny, and it almost feels like a very much a positive statement for women to be like, it's just okay to be fucking funny. We don't have to pile on any of this other crap.
Well, thanks for saying that, David, because that really is what that was my goal. Like that really was my goal is to be to and it's not that the other crap isn't going on, but it doesn't need to be your whole identity.
No, for
And it's okay
sure.
to be funny, and it's okay for young women to be funny and be the class clown and be the loudest one in the room sometimes and to become that in the world and to get the self-confidence that comes from being that in the world. And I do think I felt like that message was missing a little bit. And it was missing for me as a kid. So I really thank you, because that was really that's the goal of the show,
Well,
really.
I think a kid's
And
going to see
to
this,
make you
and
laugh.
I think a kid's going to see that and embrace it. And I mean, honestly, congrats on a hell of a piece of work. I absolutely loved it. I mean, just I hope you get
Thanks,
to do
man.
more. I can't wait for what's next. But I mean, again, just congrats on the work and thank you so much for the time today. I really do appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me. This was a delight. Thank you so much.
Likewise. All right.
Bye.
And don't forget to visit our friends over at Bay Street Video for all your DVD, Blu-ray rental or purchasing needs this summer, as they are still open for curbside and some mailing delivery as well. Over at 1172 Bay Street, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, you can give them a call at 416-964-9088. That's 416-964-9088. Or send them an email at baystreetvideoto@gmail.com for any of your DVD and Blu-ray needs.